Welcome to the Friday, August 22nd, Jubilize Me podcast. Jubilize Me. Hello, everybody. This is your hostess, Addison Berry, and today I have a couple of folks from the Jubilize Me team on the podcast. So let me run through who I have with me here. I have Joe Schindler.
Hello.
And I have Justin Harrell.
Hello.
And Amber Matz.
Hi there.
And the reason that we are on the podcast today as a team is to talk about our new video experience. We made a whole bunch of changes to our video delivery, and it's, you know, we're a video training site. It's pretty central to what we do, and the video page where people are watching videos is where most people spend most of their time. So it's pretty important stuff. And so we want to talk about why we changed it and how we went about doing that once we decided we needed to make those changes. Before we get into all that, let me do the news and events here real quickly. So in video news, we just put out a CTools plugin series this Wednesday. So that's in Amber, actually. That's Amber's series on all about basically writing your own custom plugin. And that's just, it's one short series, so that all came out in one day on Wednesday this week. And it sort of follows on the end of last week. We finished up the panels series, which was started quite a while ago, originally by Jen Lampton. And so there's a whole bunch of videos that were done by Jen. And then Amber came in and sort of finished it out. A lot of people were asking for us to go further and show more advanced panels stuff and some of the other modules you can use with panels. So Amber's done all of that stuff. So now you can really just be like crazy, like panels, CTools, wizard. Now. And then next week, this is pretty cool. We have a new partnership with a group called KNP University, which is the video education side of a company called KNP Labs. And they are a symphony shop. So they are Symphony and PHP experts. And what we're going to be doing is having some of their video content on Jubilize Me so that if you have a membership with us, you'll have access to all that stuff. And next week, we're going to be starting off our first series of content with them. And that's going to be PHP for beginners, which has been a long requested topic in our suggestion box. So we're doing it. We're going to give it to you, and we're going to give it to you from people who live and breathe that stuff. So that's starting next week, and I think it'll take a week or like 2 weeks or something for us to get the whole series actually out. But it's coming, so check that out if you have been trying to figure out that PHP thing. In events, this weekend is Drupal Camp Asheville, sort of happening now. And Lullabot Mike Herschel is going to be there. So that's in Asheville, North Carolina, which is just a beautiful area. And I don't only say that because I was born near there, but it is just a beautiful area. And I went to the camp down there a couple years ago, and it was a total blast. So if you're in the area, you should go check that one out. And then, of course, we have DrupalCon Amsterdam coming up at the end of September, beginning of October. So it's getting close now, folks. It's like about a month away. So if you have a session that you're preparing, time to start to panic a little bit. If you are doing things like doing sprinting or doing extra events, you might want to make sure you book your travel and have your hotel rooms. We do have a couple Lullabots who are speaking in Amsterdam. I will be Joe Schindler on this podcast. Is doing two sessions, yes?
No, just one.
Oh, just one? Okay.
Yep. Nice check. I'm going to be talking about the Drupal 8 plugin API.
Woo! Drupal 8, baby. And then Dave Reed is also going to be speaking. So the extended events around it, so the conference is in the middle of the week, But on Monday, there's a bunch of things going on. There's a training, there's a business summit, but there's also a community summit, which is what I'm involved with. So that's what I'm going to talk about because it's my podcast and I can. The community summit is when we get together and sprint on community topics, the people stuff, the tools that we use as a community to get our job done. Things like, you know, how do we handle conflicts and things like that. So that's on Monday. It's a free thing and you'll get lunch, but you need to register ahead of time so we know how much food to have and how much space to have. So if you're interested in coming to the Community Summit on Monday, please go to the DrupalCon site and register now for that. And then the sprints, the classic sprints, are on Friday. And again, that's just sort of open to all. You can just show up and start learning how to contribute and help other people contribute and start working on issues. But there are also extended sprints the weekends before and after. And for those, they really would like people to, again, register for that. These are smaller groups that are much more focused on sort of existing stuff. And they want to make sure, again, that they have sort of space and food available for people. So they need to know that. And they also want to get a sense of who's going to be working on what and which groups are going to be there. So that they can help make sure everybody gets together in the same space. So anyway, those two things are out there that you should probably register for ahead of time, aside from the actual DrupalCon registration. So go do it now. It's getting close. Cool. That's all I have for news and events. We can move on to the topic at hand. And that topic, like I said earlier, was that we switched up a whole lot about our video pages and also sort of on the backside how those videos get delivered to the page. And so in terms of exploring that, before we get into, like, you know, what we did and how we went about that, I'd like to start off with why did we even change it? I mean, we had stuff, it's been on the site for a while, it's working just fine. So why did we change our video experience and the whole thing, soup to nuts?
I feel like it's kind of hard to say, like, the one reason that we changed all of it, because a lot of things have changed, and a lot of them changed for different reasons. We ended up in a little bit of a scenario where we were like, well, if we're going to do this thing, we might as well do this other thing too. And if we're going to do those two things, why don't we just replace the player? Well, and if we're going to replace the player, why don't we upgrade it? And if we're going to upgrade the player, is this a good time for us to consider switching to a different delivery mechanism? And all of a sudden it was like, it all compounded into, let's just rewrite the entire video page and the way that videos are delivered. We internally called this video 2.0 for a while, which now in retrospect I think is funny because I think this is probably the fourth iteration of our video delivery system.
Yeah.
But somehow we decided that this was the video 2.0 version. A lot of the changes that we made originated really from, like, customer feedback and support requests that we've been receiving over the last year, year and a half. Mm-hmm. Things related to people wanting to have a better responsive and mobile experience with our website were, you know, compelled us to start considering, well, what would it look like if we switched from the Flash-based player that we're currently using to an HTML5-based player? That kind of thing then spawned, well, if we're going to do HTML5, we should switch to progressive download instead of streaming. So there, you know, these things kind of compounded on one another. There's also, we for a while have been struggling to provide a high quality video viewing experience for some of our members who are in locations that have traditionally higher network latency. So streaming doesn't really work well if your ping time to the streaming server is slow. And one of the thoughts there was, if we switch to something like progressive download, where you could basically, like, press play, then press pause, wait for the entire video to buffer. Even if it took 30 minutes for the video to buffer, you could hit play and watch the video when you were done. As opposed to streaming, you would just kind of have to either deal with a really low quality stream or not be able to watch it at all. So we wanted to be able to provide a better viewing experience for them. We've been wanting to switch to a true HD format for a while.
Mm-hmm.
previously our videos were all like 960 by 540, which is like, I guess it's technically HD, but we wanted a true 720p. So, you know, part of the process was re-encoding all of the videos that we have to do that and switching to just a SD and HD version instead of the, I don't know, we had like four, in some cases, five different quality levels of the videos previously. So simplifying things like that.
Yeah.
And I mean, the list goes on and on. One of the biggest most common requests that we've had in the past was people wanted to be able to toggle the playback speed of a video.
That's a big request.
So apparently people think that I talk too slowly and they just wanted to listen to me talk even faster, which
is actually kind of awkward.
Yeah. But streaming doesn't support that. There's no way to like speed up a stream. So in order to support that, we had to switch the way that we deliver video. And it kind of, you know, manifests itself in two ways. We've got this new video delivery system, so you can have a toggle. And we improved the user experience, or like the player itself, so there's actually a button that you can click to toggle the speed. I don't know. Again, it's a whole bunch of things. For me, it mostly comes back to like wanting to finally address a bunch of these long-standing feature requests that we've had.
Yep. Yeah, and it's been a while since we have made major changes, really. It's been like, what, at least 2 years, right?
Pretty close, yep.
So, you know, on the internet, that's a long time in terms of web technology as well. I mean, things like using an HTML5 player weren't really feasible back the last time we reviewed all this stuff and implemented our original, you know, player and things like that. So it was also like there's all these feature requests and all these things that are coming in from people. And it's like, let's step back and reevaluate now and see, can we do these things, you know, in a way that makes sense now? And it's like, why, yes, we can. So that was coming to the decision to actually make all these changes. And like Joe said, I think it was sort of, we started with sort of one discussion here and one discussion there. And then, you know, it was like, wow, yeah, this is like sort of snowballing. And it became this thing. And we're going to just basically rip out everything and do it all over from scratch in a certain way. And it was like, wait a second, how do we, what? Like, it's not a matter of just.
I totally remember feeling like. Our discussion started from, you know, like, let's set a quarterly goal of we're going to update our video player to JW Player 6. I was like, all right, cool. Yeah, we can do that.
Totally.
And then, like, a week later, we're like, oh, man, okay. So we're really going to do this, right? We're going to rewrite the entire system. And our quarterly goals got much bigger all of a sudden.
Yeah, and I was like, does that fit in a quarter? It's like, holy cow. Yeah, and so, yeah, so we ended up sort of coming to this decision that this was a thing that we needed and wanted to change. But the process from getting from that idea and concept to actually being able to finally launch it, and I guess we launched about a month ago now, I guess. Was that like 3 or 4 weeks ago? Mm-hmm. So, like, you know, and so this took us a while because I guess we came to our decision and got all excited about it. I guess it really at December's retreat, right?
I feel like it was, I mean,
before
the wheels
that,
started moving even before that.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of
that's
it started
where we
from,
got a little head, we got a little, like, momentum going there, I guess, yeah.
A lot of it started from just kind of Justin's work on wanting to improve the experience from a user experience perspective of our video pages.
Right, like
and
the video pages
I remember,
kind of,
you know, he showed up to the retreat last December with some design comps, and it really spurred this whole like, oh, okay, there's all kinds of things we could do here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what? Yeah. So in like the discussion and like, yeah, it did start with sort of the UX and like, you know, for a little bit of context and backstory. Last November, we relaunched the site. We did a major upgrade. We redesigned the site. And so we launched basically a whole new site November of last year. And I think part of what was happening was that it was like we did a redesign, but we essentially put a new look on the existing site, I think. Sort of, we wanted the same elements and those same kinds of things, and then we'll launch it, and then we can come back to that. And it was just sort of like looking at the video page, it's like, man, it would have been great to completely rethink it, but we need to get the site launched. Like, we can't stop and rethink our video page. It took us long enough to get that site relaunched. And so I think there was definitely, and we also had a bunch of new folks come onto the team. So Justin started last September. Joe Fender started around the same time. Amber came on board. And so we had a whole bunch of new, fresh eyes also on the site. And we were already at the stage of like, okay, well, this is what it is. We just need to get it done and launch it. But I think there was also a bunch of sort of fresh eyes of, yeah, so about the video page that was bugging some people, you know, rightly so. And I think that's where it really started to itch. I think, you know, Justin really took on the, yeah, this could be so much different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, it was a lot of fun to work on. I remember internally we all talked about the issue of when you got to a video, it wasn't completely obvious, like how to get to the next video and stuff like that. And that's something we really tried to focus on by adding the playlist and stuff like that, is to give you a better experience and make it obvious that you're in a series or you're an individual video, and you can quickly go between video and video within the series a lot easier.
Yeah. What was it like? Because I remember we were just sort of like, you know, throw everything away, Justin. Just tell us how this is supposed to be, man. But I mean, that's its own process, right? I mean, you were coming in and just like, okay, wait, you want me to just throw everything away and give you a new video page? Like, so can you describe a little bit of like how you sort of got started with the ideas you had, and then sort of our process for refining that and moving mm-hmm. it forward?
Yeah, I still remember the first time I started like getting into the visual design and just brainstorming. I mean, obviously before that, there's a lot of just pen and paper brainstorming and thinking things out. But I still remember I shared the kind of first thoughts I was having at our retreat in December, and everyone was like, well, that's great, but like we can do this and we can do this and we can do this. And then just starting conversations, we were like unraveling a bunch of other awesome ideas we could implement and stuff like that. So I think just like the first step was just like getting started, because like you said, we had just launched the new design, which was a huge task. So thinking about like scrapping it and doing it from like the ground up was daunting at first. But I think once we started getting like ideas down and things started getting rolling, we just kept thinking of more and more ideas. And what I learned through this whole process is that like you can't be afraid to keep reiterating and changing things, because like new ideas always come up throughout the process. It's not going to be a completely like linear process.
Yeah. So how long did it take us from? So you showed us some your initial like design comps in December.
Yes.
And then it took us a while to sort of finally like settle, or at least, you know, 90%, 95% settle on what it was going to be before we started sharing it outside of the team to try and get feedback. But do you remember how long that was? Like when we started doing that stuff? It seems to me like it was sometime like...
it was before spring? South by Southwest. Because I remember at South by Southwest, it had started to be like built.
Right, so it was like March-ish or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we spent quite a bit of time.
Yeah.
Tinkering with that.
Something that I think really helped us. It's I mean, pretty widely used now. But I was pretty new to it, and I think it was still fairly new. I could be wrong, but we used InVision app a lot, and I think that helped. Generate a lot of great conversations within there and to be able to brainstorm together. So we did a lot of that, and a lot of the changes and stuff were made through that.
Yeah, it's a great app. And what it does is it basically, like, Justin can put up a a graphic, whatever kind of graphic he wants. And he can even create some sort of like basic interaction points where if you click on this button, it'll show another image, you know? So like you can have a page that has a button and he can mark this area. If someone clicks on that, then take them to this page image that I have. Mm-hmm. But what the really nice thing about it is that you can just click in the image right where you want to say something about this thing, like this button right here. And then you can just leave your comment and then you can have an entire comment thread there. And it really does facilitate conversation and people really being able to be very specific about what it is that they're looking at and talking about. And of course, one thing to keep in mind is that we are a distributed team. So we're not all sitting in the same office, you know, being able to look at the same screen and point with our fingers. And so EnvisionApp gives us a wonderful tool as a distributed company to be able to have that experience and keep those conversations going. So we use that heavily.
I think especially with this page having so much functionality, it kind of found like a midway point between just static designs and HTML, like mm-hmm. mockups and stuff like that, or working wireframes. So I think we were able to use it in an interesting way where we were adding a lot of functionality and stuff like that, but not moving fully into HTML wireframes at that part or that point.
Yeah. And it really makes it easy for anyone on the team to give feedback, even if they're not intimately involved with the build or the design of it. And so it's a really accessible way to give feedback at whatever level you want. So, yeah, mm-hmm. it's cool.
Yeah, because we could also invite other people from Lullabot in to be like, hey, you want to peek over our shoulder and see what's going on? And we actually ended up coming up with sort of a whole testing round, I guess. We got a couple of just random people to do like a UX run through on it through a service. And then we also reached out to a couple of members who had mentioned, you know, in particular, like had comments or suggestions about this page and what, you know, basically made them crazy about it. And so we reached out to, you know, a couple of those people and asked them to help us do some testing on just sort of like how does this look. And so we built like a prototype of it so that people could actually click around and see how it worked and see how it actually functioned. And we also shared it with the entire Lullabot team and got a lot of really great feedback through that entire process. And then we went back and we did some more iterations based on that feedback. But then we felt pretty confident with what we had at that point. But it was interesting because building the prototype, we actually had to have things working, or we had to have like the ideas, because this was the design and we wanted to implement. But like Joe was saying, like we also, I mean, everything else about this was changing. The actual player software was changing. The video delivery system that we were going to implement with it was changing. And so at the same time we were building that prototype, we were also having to play around with, well, how does this affect the entire chain? What's going on there? Yeah, there was a whole lot of things going on. But how in tandem with the design process was starting to figure out the back end pieces that we were going to do?
I think once we recognized that it was going to make the most sense to do both at the same time, or really that we needed to. I think for me, the trigger point was seeing a design comp that Justin had put together that had a speed toggle button in it, and being like, can't do that. And then I'm like, well, I guess we could. And then it was just like everything fell apart from there. And I was like, oh man, okay, I guess we're going to have to change all of this. Once we had decided that that was something we wanted to pursue, we actually spent quite a bit of time doing like R&D, trying to figure out like what's involved with this switch. Well, really, like what do we want to switch to? So we were using Wowza, which is a streaming server, in order to deliver video. And we knew that in order to facilitate the things we wanted to be able to do, we were going to have to switch to what's called progressive download. So we had to start looking into, well, what are our options for for doing progressive download. I had done a bunch of this research a few years ago prior to us switching to Wowza. At the time, we ultimately decided that, given the current state of video delivery and the web, browser technology and all of that, streaming was still the best way to go. So it was kind of revisiting a lot of the things we had looked at before and kind of updating the research that we had done, you know, what is the current state of HTML5? Mm-hmm. And honestly, things had changed a ton. And in fact, like to give an idea of how fast some of this video stuff changes, when we started doing the research in order to decide if we could switch to progressive download, all of our testing indicated that we were going to have to encode all of our video in 2 for sure and possibly 3 different formats. We needed to support H.264 for like WebKit-based browsers. We needed to support WebM for like Firefox and some other browsers. And just like looking at that, it was like, oh man, this is daunting. We're gonna have to re-encode everything in 3 different formats. By the time, 6 months later, by the time we rolled this all out, we end up encoding everything in 1 format. We're able to do it all in H.264 except for Firefox on a Mac, which currently doesn't support H.264, so we fall back to a Flash player there. But there's it's like a known issue. There's a ticket. They're working on it. I'm guessing within the next couple of months, H.264 support will be universal. And so just that within the 6 months that we work on this mm-hmm. changed it, and other things as well. Working on it in tandem, I think that, yeah, I guess we really did kind of work on both parts of it at the same time. Joe Fender and Justin spent a lot of time creating an HTML and CSS sort of like mock-up of how the page would work and all of the interactions. And while they were doing that, I spent a lot of time figuring out how are we going to re-encode all of our video once we do, where is it going to be hosted, and that kind of stuff. And then we started slowly wiring things together, really. Mm-hmm. It's one of those things happen separately for a while, but then at a certain point, in order for me to test whether the video playback was working, I had to have a player to put the video into to play it. And in order to have a player, the front end stuff had to be far enough along that we could test with that.
Yeah. Yeah, it took us a long time, but I feel like it was very, because sometimes you feel like, oh yeah, we'll knock this out in a month. And then you're like, 8 months later, you're like, what is going on? But this was like, we knew this was going to be a big, long uh-huh. process, and that we wanted to take our time and we wanted to do it right. And we didn't have to rush the situation. So it was, I think it was really interesting for me to just see, because also in the past, we honestly haven't really had a large enough team to really kind of split things out that way and take that kind of time. Uh-huh. and care for something like, this big of a thing and try and get it out in a timely manner. So, I don't know. It was pretty cool.
Felt like one of those scenarios where there are so many things going on at the same time and you're throwing all these balls up into the air, but you have to make sure that they all fall down and hit the ground at exactly the same time. And the further and further along we got, it was like mm-hmm. less actually writing code or, updating designs, and more coordinating. Like, okay, we got to make sure that when we press this button, everything changes all at once. And that part got to be interesting too. I remember having lots of hack pads with checklists mm-hmm. that were like, okay, when you want to do this, you have to do everything in this checklist in this order. And then trying to automate as much of that as we could so that when it came time to actually, deploy the changes, it didn't take us, 24 hours of downtime on the site to run through that whole checklist.
Yeah, because I mean, we got the design pretty well tamped down. So in the spring, once we had our user testing done with that, and of course we continue to make small tweaks, but the bulk of it was there. We had the prototype built. We understood, you know, how our test progressive download stuff would work with that new player in the prototype. And then it was implementing that in Drupal. And I feel like we got sort of like all of those pieces into place. And then it was just sort of like, okay, now we actually have to coordinate how this is going to happen. And like that ended up taking a good chunk of time, like leading up to the actual launch itself, was mostly like coordinating and planning and testing and double checking and all of those kinds of things. So I don't have a very good sense of like how long between basically having all of the code in place and us launching was. Do you have an idea of that, Joe?
Not really. I don't feel like there was ever necessarily a point where we were like, all right, the code is done, and now we're just coordinating. Yeah. It was always like, there were,
we up need until to tweak like this the last minute,
there were a lot of edge case things that we had to figure out. You know, when the core of your business is letting people watch videos, it turns out if you change the way that the videos are delivered, it affects basically everything. And we just kept discovering all these different edge cases and like having to like go back and reevaluate decisions that we had made earlier.
But
I would say from the time that we were kind of in a, how did this work out? We created a clone of our site, like on a development server that had all of the new code on it. And then we went through and manually re-encoded and wired up all of the videos in one series so that we could test that out. Like, is the player working? Are all the interactions working? And so forth. And that kind of alerted us to some other issues that we were going to have to sort out. But we also only wanted to encode one series to start out with because it's kind of expensive to re-encode all of our video.
We have a huge library.
Yeah, it's a couple terabytes of data that needed to get encoded. So it's both a time-consuming and expensive endeavor. So we wanted to make sure we were going to get it right. So we tested it out by, you know, testing a single series, and then we started to recognize, well, okay, not all of our videos are the same. Like, we have some videos that are part of a series, but we have some like the Do It With Drupal videos that aren't part of a series, and they're also encoded in a different format. So we had to make a list of what are all of the variations on the site and make sure that we had kind of wired up each of those so that we could test it. And that took probably a couple, I would say 3 or 4 weeks worth of kind of just poking at those things and testing and figuring out what all the variations were, continuing to update the code as we'd kind of discovered bugs in that. And then once we had it all ironed out, basically coming up with a plan and writing all the code that was required in order to automate the re-encoding of all of the videos. And, you know, we, as a result of all of these changes, we did a lot of underlying like information architecture changes too. So the data that we store is different than it used to be. So we had to write scripts to upgrade all of that. And for a while we were just making those changes manually in order to test things and make sure it was going to work. But we recognized that, you know, with close to 1,000 videos on our site, there was no way someone was going to sit down and go through and edit every one of those. So that part probably took a good, probably a month at least, to just kind of organize and plan all of that.
Yeah. Yep. So, yeah, and then we launched. Woo! And it worked. That was awesome. I think we only caught like one or two bugs that were like, oops.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing was there were a handful of videos that didn't get re-encoded. They had somehow like not made it onto my spreadsheet that listed all of the videos, in which I then like encoded every one and checked it off on the spreadsheet. But there was like random videos that had a different file name, so they didn't make it onto the spreadsheet. And but if we've gotten all of those fixed at this point,
And just a handful of like admin stuff that we didn't really test, like Kyle and I trying to wire up video lessons and discovering like, oh, that doesn't work anymore.
Yeah. I mean, because we changed the entire system, right? So it changes our side of it as well, not just the player side, but the whole publication process we have is fairly involved, actually.
Quite.
And, you know, it's one of those things, like, there's lots of room for improvement and automation on our publication side, but we end up spending our time on the user experience side of things. You know, sort of the cobbler's kids have no shoes kind of a thing.
Or, you know, like recording new videos.
Yeah, you know, doing stuff like that. So, yeah, our actual admin side of things definitely was a little clunky out of the box, shall we say. And we still have, I think, a fair number of things to clean up there, like long term. Like, yeah, it would be great if we did, but we had that before as well with the old system. So, but yeah, we had some initial kind of gotchas that we weren't really aware of on that side. But overall, it was an incredibly smooth launch for basically ripping out the central system of our website and putting something else in its place. That was pretty amazing.
I remember being like the night that we deployed everything, being like, there's no way this is gonna work. There's no way this is gonna work.
I'm like, ready to roll back. I'm gonna be up for the next
48 hours. This is not gonna work. And then like 20 minutes later, I'm like, oh,
I know. You were like sending an email like, okay, it's all done, folks. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Where's the fire?
It was nice to have it all go off smoothly. And I think that it really shows how all of the time that we put into planning how the deployment was going to work and making sure that things were like automated and removing as much of the someone has to go through and do this by hand steps as possible, they ended up paying off in the end, you know. Mm-hmm. It minimized the downtime for the site, but it also meant that like, we knew how to deploy these changes, and we had been able to test it and practice that deployment a couple of times before actually doing it on the live site. Which, if we were, you know, if our deployment was, all right, all hands on deck, everyone's got to go edit every video now, like, that's, you can't really practice that.
Right.
And so I think it really shows that the energy we put in up front to make that work paid off.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, taking an extra month to test and document and automate things, you know, saved, you know, again, yes, it maybe saved downtime and lots of other things. But at the end of the day, like, I'd much rather invest a month of time doing that than invest the craziness of a fire exploding on you and then spending like the next 3 or 4 days not sleeping to try and clean something up that has just gone horribly awry. You know, that month is worth it.
Yeah. One of the things that we talked about a lot was, and we've talked about this before with our site, there's sort of an element of, we can make a deployment of something new, and we have sort of a time window within which we can revert to a previous version of the site. So if we try to release something new on the site and it's botched and it doesn't work and things are exploding, we have like a relatively short time window in which we can easily revert things. Mm-hmm. But because our site does all of this like recurring billing stuff, as soon as our site is, this, you know, basically started to process more recurring billing, it becomes really hard to revert to a previous version of the site.
Mm-hmm.
And so you end up in a scenario where instead of being able to revert to a backup and figure out why the deployment didn't work and spend the next couple of weeks sorting it all out and then try again, it's basically like you're trying to put out fires until it's fixed. And that's a really stressful spot to be in.
Yep. Cool. Well, we should probably move towards wrapping this up. But as a sort of moving in that direction question, so we launched Video 2.0 and it took us, you know, a good part of a year to do that. And we do have other stuff in the hopper, but what's like next on your guys' horizons for our site in terms of changes that are coming?
I think a big one that that we've been working on and hopefully will be released in the near future is we've been redesigning the library page, which is kind of tied into the video 2.0 stuff we did. That should be really interesting, and I think a lot of people will be excited about that once that's released.
Yeah.
And I think a little bit of like using the same process too of going, being able to look at the page and say, okay, if we could completely redo this and make it better, what would we do differently?
Yeah, with the experience and where things are now, like what could we do to really make this awesome?
And I think what we've learned through this redesign is really helping us with the library stuff redesign. So it's good to have that like in our history.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. We got more cool stuff on the way, folks. go ahead.
I don't really have any idea of when it'll happen necessarily, but one of the things that's been on my like wish list for years has been to allow users to create their own custom playlist of videos. Mm-hmm. And I think that the new design, both the new design and kind of the way that we architected the way the code underneath and kind of how everything fits together might actually finally make that a possibility. I'm hoping that sometime in the future we'll get to
allow, on our list for a long time.
Like, I love the idea of being able to have somebody contact us and say, hey, I'm really struggling to try to figure out how to do X in Drupal. And we're like, oh, we can just whip together a custom playlist of videos and send it over to you. Mm-hmm. And you can go through that playlist. So.
Yep. Or, another use case that I would really like to see is like, because we have group memberships, and it would be really nice for like a group owner to be able to say, this is like our onboarding account. And so when someone new comes in, we want them to watch these videos in this order, or there's this particular project. And so everybody on the team should be, familiar with these things, and that they can sort of create their own custom lists for their team to be able to share and use together and stuff. So, yeah. Cool stuff that we would definitely like to get to. And now that we have some of the upgrade took a really long time, but we have that done. This new video stuff was really kind of a big central piece. And so it's been awesome. But I think we also are all hoping a little bit that we might be able to start to move into other features and things that we've just been wanting to do for a really long time, and we just haven't been able to get to it. I think there's a lot of exciting stuff to come. Cool. Well, let's call this a podcast. Let's wrap her up. Does anybody have any last thoughts that they wanted to make sure they shouted out before we drift away into the ether?
I'm going to just throw out there that if you haven't seen it yet, there's an HD toggle on the video player. It's off by default, but if you click the HD button, you'll get to watch all of our videos in glorious 720p, and
HD,
it's amazing.
HD, baby. Put it on a big monitor. Blow that thing up. Cool. Awesome. Well, thanks for being on the podcast, guys. I appreciate it, and I'm sure I'll be talking to you all very, very soon. For our listeners, if you have thoughts or suggestions or questions, you should let us know. You can always leave comments on the podcast page itself in the comments. But you can also get in touch with us on Twitter. So twitter.com/DrupalizeMe, Facebook.com/DrupalizeMe. We're also on Google+, and we have a contact form on our site, so you can contact us there. Let us know what you're thinking. If you have suggestions for topics that you'd really like to hear about, we definitely want to know that so that we can make sure we gather the folks up and do the podcast that way. So until next time, happy Drupaling, folks. See ya.